Hello and welcome to the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast for the 8th of March 2015. My name's TRP Watson, and this week I'm joined by Paul in London, Web Cowgirl, and Gareth James. We're now going to talk about Lardo at the Old Red Lion. This appears to be a play about a fat man who becomes a wrestler. Maybe I should become a wrestler. Paul, tell me more about this and what you thought of it.
Well, actually, we could all become wrestlers because there's quite a lot of links in the subject matter to being an avid social media user and also wanting to be a wrestler. So I thought, there's parallels with theatre bloggers. But I digress. Lardo is actually, it's really part play, but it's also kind of part event, which is playing at the Old Red Lion Theatre. You get a sense that you're about to see something quite different when you enter the theatre, because where the performance space is, you see, is a wonderful wrestling ring that is where most of the action takes place in this piece. The story is about a Lardo, who's this slightly chubby, overweight man he has a girlfriend, but he loses her, and he's determined to join what is called this local scene called Tartan Wrestling Madness in Glasgow, which is the bad boys of the Scottish wrestling scene. And through a mixture of sort of just general determinedness, he manages to get it on the scene and become what is essentially an overnight sensation. And then he has to choose between, does he keep continuing with this very extreme form of wrestling, or does he actually get on with his life and do something else that's actually a little bit more meaningful? And it then goes into a fairly conventional story about, does he leave everything behind and, you know, risk injury and danger to his life to become this mega wrestling star, or does he actually think about what is actually really important in his life? Now, the interesting thing about this piece, though, is it's slightly conventional in its storytelling, but it has a wonderful set of characters that are quite gripping to watch. I think Lardo himself, which is played by Daniel Buckley, who I've seen in Usher's The Musical, but he's also done other musicals such as Spring Awakening and The Book of Mormon and Fresher, the musical, plays this very ambitious and youthful and energetic Lardo, and he's never quite the loser that he could be in this piece, and you actually have a great deal of sympathy for him as sort of the funny guy in this piece. And up against him is another wonderful character called Whiplash Mary, who's played by Zoe Hunter, and she has this wonderful scene where she talks about, you know, why she's in wrestling and sort of how she balances the work of wrestling with the meaningless jobs that she takes to actually get by and make a living on. And so there's actually some really wonderful scenes in this and some wonderful characters. I think one of the things that is also mind-blowing is the stunts that they actually do, because there's a lot of bodies thrown about, some very clever stunt moves and so forth. And it's actually, you do find yourself getting caught up in the whole excitement of the piece. And they do their best, the cast, to actually whip the audience into a frenzy. So it is actually quite funny at frequent points throughout the piece. And, you know, the night I was there, the audience members started to spontaneously sort of interject at various points, yelling out, "Come on, Lardo!" And by the end of the piece, I think I was, you know, having Lardo, Lardo, Lardo in my head. But having said all that, you know, it is quite an event. It is quite exciting. There's some wonderful characters. But there is a lot of also very conventional parts to this play. And I think that's what somewhat lets it down. You have a unusual subplot about a health and safety inspector that's quite a bit cliched. And it does tend to drag the piece out and send it in probably directions that it didn't need to go. Because I think when you actually just focus on the characters and the wrestling and the excitement of the actual piece, I think it's good enough to hold its own without having to go into a more conventional storytelling. But it's quite exciting, and let's let Tom Vane also share her thoughts on it.
Well, I thought Lardo was a damn fine night at the theater, and I think I'm not going to really spend too much time sort of wallowing in details of story, because it was written convincingly enough that I found myself buying into all of the characters and their backstories. I believed that this big, round, tubby boy had managed to pull himself this beautiful girlfriend, Kelly, played by Laura Darrell. While it seemed quite unlikely that the unscrupulous wrestling promoter could have the kind of backstory that they talked about, he was at the level of almost an evil villain, almost like sort of a mustache twirling snidely whiplash, and he'd really gone over the edge. And I loved all the attention to detail. Like, there was one moment where the people were saying that I guess Lardo had been working out on some particular beach, which I'd never heard of. And three people in the audience burst into laughter. And I asked the person sitting next to me about it. And she said, oh, God, if you've ever been to Glasgow, it's where all the bottles are all piled up. It's like an industrial wasteland. And it just had a real vibrant, lively feeling of a play actually taking place in Glasgow with real people. And that helped me get to the point when the wrestling matches were happening, it had enough of a feeling that I was actually at a wrestling match, and kind of broke down the fourth wall there. And we were being encouraged to cheer and clap and get behind what was going. And even though, of course, we could see that the punches were fake and that people were stomping on the floors to make extra banging noises when they were hitting people, I was still able to just go with the moment and have a lot of fun. And I really did get behind Lardo and his childish enthusiasm for this admittedly childish entertainment, and the twist of him making himself into this big star on YouTube. I thought it was really made it seem plausible that people would want to have him on the stage because he had made himself famous. And they really transformed the space upstairs at the Red Lion. It's the best I've ever seen it, with these primary colors all over the place, the blue of the Scottish flag and red and yellow, the lockers of the boxing ring. And although I had a difficult time at the very beginning telling that they were supposed to be on a beach watching turtles instead of sitting on the edge of the boxing ring because they couldn't really get away from it, by the end, it was just all washing over me and I was loving it and heckling the bad guy during the final wrestling match. And I thought it was a fine piece of storytelling and an engaging play. And given that it's in that really intimate space, it's a very full-on experience. And I'm telling everybody that if you're looking for a great night out, you should go see Lardo. Lardo! Lardo! Oh, sorry.
It is very tempting to do. And actually, interestingly, when I was looking up about wrestling in Britain, I came across the BBC One documentary called Insane Fight Club and the Vice documentary, The British Wrestler, which give insights into the real world of Scottish wrestling. And there's a character called Grado, who is similar in some respects to Lardo, and I wonder if was part of the inspiration for this piece.
I found out this is actually the first play he's ever done.
Yes, his first full-length one. He's done a few other pieces, I think, although I was just trying to find what they were. But again, maybe some more research is needed there.
I thought it was a transfer from Edinburgh because it just felt like it could have been a very good fringe production.
The whole venue feels like it's been transferred from Edinburgh.
Yeah,
it's such a great immersive experience.
Yeah, I'd like to see it in a bigger space, like so that the audience could actually be all four sides.
Completely surrounding it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, because it would have been more fun if I was staring at other people's faces, cheering and roaring while it was going on. But people really got into the show, and yeah. I don't think I've ever seen people kind of cast off their audience-ness like that and really buy into it. They also had a special Lardo drink. That was
I did see that. I decided not to go down that path, but it looked quite hardcore. But the other thing you might want to add is that the Glaswegian accents are quite thick in this piece. And so be sure to brush up on your Glaswegian dialect, I think.
I was able to follow about 95% of it, but I think if it had been 4 or 5 years ago, I would have been losing a lot. So this play is probably going to be a difficult one for anyone who isn't a native of these islands.
The accents aside, there is some wonderful humor in this piece, and it's not to be missed in that respect, because some of the comedy is just quite priceless, I think, and the writing and the performances really stand out, I think, in terms of his ear for dialogue and the Glaswegian characters and their roughness, but their frankness is quite intriguing.
Yeah, I love the fact that one of the characters was a mom living on a council estate, and that was just kind of like the way things were, and she kind of like talked about it and then moved on.
Exactly, yeah. It's quite a slice of life.
We're now going to talk about Lippi at the Young Vic in their Maria Auditorium. This is a play from the Dead Centre Theatre Company, which is an Irish theatre company, who first produced this play in 2013. The story is that, well, initially we have what appears to be an after-show talk, somewhat better handled than some of the after-show talks I've seen, I have to say. But the actor they bring on is slightly more interested, not so much in talking about the play he's just been in, but also talking about his skill at lip reading. And he reveals that he was involved in a case in the early 2000s where 4 women starved themselves to death, and he was asked by the police, the Gardaí, to come in and try to work out what the women, 2 of the women who were captured on CCTV, were saying in the weeks before their death. So we get this idea of the malleability and the changes and the putting words into these people's mouths. Gareth, tell me more about this and what you thought of it.
Well, it's certainly one of the most unpredictable things I've ever been to. And I think it's also quite a kind of surreal journey. And to be frank, I was as puzzled at the end as I was at the beginning. Before the play even starts, there's a sort of, well, the man who's going to chair the Q&A and his technician kind of amiable, sort of doing things and getting ready for this. And then you're kind of woken up with a jolt, really, because then you're told you're at the after play discussion. You know, of course, you haven't seen the play yet. Whether it is that play or not isn't so clear either. But as you say, it moves on, it goes off on a tangent onto talking about lip reading. And that's when we move back to what is a crime scene, and then back from that into the last hours of these ladies who have created a kind of suicide pact. And then we then end with video footage of what is clearly a homage to Samuel Beckett, because it's just a mouth talking to us. It's actually longer than Beckett's Not I, but it's clearly, you know, you couldn't do that as an Irish theatre company without knowing what you're doing. So that's clearly a homage to Beckett. I think the play is kind of, you know, really saying, by using the lip reading analogy, that, you know, we can speculate, we can assume, we can second guess things, but we'll never know the full truth. And in this particular case, he was lip reading for the police. He was lip reading 2 of the women, 2 of the sisters in this suicide pact on CCTV in a shopping center. And it was clear from the opening of the show, the Q&A, that he considers, and it's proven to us, that lip reading is an inexact science. And that's proven to us both live and on video. So I guess maybe just trying to sort of tell us what you see isn't necessarily what you believe, maybe. I was intrigued by it. I really admire the ambition of it. I think it's an incredibly ambitious piece. And the staging is very, very creative. And indeed, all the stagecraft and all the performances. And it made me think, and it held my attention. But at the end of it, I didn't feel as satisfied as I normally do by Beckett's plays. And I think Beckett is the kind of closest thing to this. But it's a kind of 21st century Beckett, really. And I didn't leave really feeling fully satisfied. I left with some admiration, but without satisfaction. So that's a kind of odd place to be, really. I don't know about you.
I was not confused, but it's probably going to sound like I was. I was intrigued by it. I mean, it's almost as if it didn't seem to know what it wanted to do, because you get this sort of this strong right turn where the actor really wants to talk about this case, but that's not what the play's about in the first part. And then we get the thing he really wants to talk about and the way he gets it drawn into it, because it's, we have that sense of that he's partially there while they're doing the crime scene investigation part of investigating the suicide, but it also, you have the four women there while that's actually happening, and you have this idea of how they maintained discipline amongst themselves. There's certain aspects where the interpreter is interacting with them and interfering with them, but to show that they have to keep to this pact, but you never quite understand why they're doing it or what it's all about, which is, you know, it is always nice to find out these things. But unfortunately, I think that the case in real life that this is based on, they never did find out why these women did what they did. It just happened. That open-ended nature of this makes it slightly dissatisfying for me. I wanted a bit more determination, a bit more closure, a bit more feeling that we knew why they did it in the end. And of course, this being real life, we don't, and we didn't. It did make it slightly frustrating, I suppose, but overall, it's a very, very well put together thing, and it does get you really thinking, and there's a lot of really good visual pieces. I mean, most of the middle sequence of the play is done almost in silence, but any speech is done by the lip reader, and the women don't really talk. They're just they're on stage acting things out, and you get that sense of their bond, and it's very striking the way that all happens.
I think because nobody knows why they did this in real life. I mean, it was two sisters and their aunt, I think, wasn't it? Because nobody knows why they did it, then if you're going to do a play about it, then presumably you're going to speculate. But actually, the play doesn't speculate as to why they did it. So that kind of made me wonder, so why did you do it then? I guess I'm not sure. As much as I admired it, I'm not sure what the point was, I think. But we sound as if we have very much the same reaction.
It has, as you said, it's good, very good and worth watching, but there's that slight feeling at the end.
It has to be said, it is only 70 minutes long.
We're now going to talk about Game at the Almeida Theatre. This is a new play by Mike Bartlett, and it's a very short play, and it has been rather, well, almost over-elaborate in the way they've dressed it. They've reconfigured the theatre completely, and you are allocated zones of seating on four sides of what would be the theatre. You seem to come in at the sides and in all sorts of places, but just not into the main theatre, into the main stalls. What we have initially is a few video screens and some windows which are looking through into something. We can't initially see what it is until the play begins, where we see a rather nicely appointed house and a couple apparently moving in. This couple, it transpires, have been given this place rent-free as part of some kind of game. They are, shall we say, the avatars within the game. They are the people participating in the game, the people who you might see as the people who the game is practiced upon. We don't really want to say what the game is, although most reviews have said what the game is in their practically in their first sentences. Then what we get is them trying to live out a life while having to participate in the game at certain periods of the day, and trying to have a fairly normal life, although it's clear that this is not the only house where the game takes place. There seems to be a whole village where this game is taking place, and there are lots of other participants, and sometimes they're sharing gossip with those people. But this couple seem to stick it out for a long time. We go, I think we see it over 7 years, and in the end, there's a child that comes in, and initially the child isn't supposed to participate in the game, but forces outside mean that the child has to. What we see, and we are watching this either through the video screens when the windows in front of us are blanked out, or the shutters come down so we can't see in, or we are watching it live through the windows, what happens is that in each scene, we have a group of people standing amongst the audience, or one of the sections of the audience, and these are the players of the game, for whom the participants are their victims, if you like. And we hear this sort of rather unpleasant nature of the kick they get out of what essentially is torturing these participants, this couple, and latterly their child. We get that deep sense of it's all really rather unpleasant, and sort of an unpleasant nature to this whole setup, although at first the couple think they're getting quite a lot out of it, but in the end I think that they lose way too much, and we discover how much they've lost. And it's not just them. One of the constant presences is the man who has to monitor the behaviour of the players of the game, so to make sure that the players don't overstep the rules of the game too much. And he obviously is very deeply affected by this constant watching over the years to see what happens to this family and how this family are in some way destroyed. I found it a fantastic piece of design and staging. It's incredibly imaginative. I'm not certain it's Mike Bartlett's best piece. I think he's a bit stronger, and this lasts just about an hour. And you've got the impression that any more than that, and it wouldn't have been as good. And there's some feeling I got after seeing the play. Just seeing the play, I was very impressed by it. But after seeing the play, I began to think, well, perhaps it wasn't substantial enough. Perhaps they didn't go into as much detail as they could have done. Perhaps there's, you know, you could have had more rounded characters. Instead of what we're getting is that these snapshots of the participants being victims of the players. Gareth, what did you think about this?
Well, I found it deeply disturbing, and I found it riveting. And I've recommended it to lots of people, but I've tried not to sort of talk too much about it. I mean, I think you've sort of described it very well without spoiling it there. I mean, we are looking in sometimes, it's like kind of through a one-way mirror. Sometimes the screen comes down and we can't do that, but between looking through and or looking at the TV screens in our section, we can see everything that matters, because the game takes place inside, as you say, and the gamers are actually with us on the outside. So you'll either see the gamers in your section some of the time, or on a TV screen in another section some of the time. But I found it, it just kind of drew me in very quickly. You know, you go in and you put on these headphones and you're in that does give you a kind of disorientated feel to it. And I purposely didn't read anything about it before I went in. So I didn't know very much at all, except that it was being reconfigured. I mean, the reconfiguration and the whole design thing is simply extraordinary. I mean, Miriam Huerta and Sacha Wares, the designer and director respectively, have done some amazing things, but this for me tops the lot. I mean, this is the most extraordinary immersive environment with a real painstaking attention to detail. I mean, my mouth kind of fell open really as I walked in and didn't really stop until I left really. It just completely blew my mind. But it is, as you say, I mean, it's like being in a hide. If anybody's been bird watching, it's kind of like being in a hide, really. And it's got sort of echoes a bit of Big Brother and echoes a bit of, well, of other things as well. But it is its own thing. I mean, it is absolutely unique. And Mike Bartlett does really do these kind of miniatures which have huge impact. I mean, it started with Cock, which was in the theatre upstairs at the Royal Court, which was about relationships. And then just recently, of course, we had Bull in the Young Vic, which was set in a boxing ring and was about corporate bullying. And now here we have something, you know, with another complete setting, but only an hour. And I agree with you that if it went on for an hour, it would be more is less. It absolutely fits its slot perfectly well. And what it seems to do in these kind of short period of times, he really does seem to provoke your thinking a lot, and really does have more impact in that hour than a lot of plays have in more than twice the time. And I don't think this is that implausible, to be honest, certainly conceptually. And I think it's actually very disturbing. And it really made me think. I mean, when I wrote a very, very limited review about, I think, 36 hours later, I was still thinking about it. I hadn't really stopped thinking about it the whole of that time. So for me, I think it is a great work because it's a miniature that packs a huge punch. It's a unique theatrical experience. It's not something you could go to more than once. I wouldn't go back and see it again just because, you know, it's the experience of seeing it for the first time that is the experience. But I would certainly recommend it to anyone who's up for a sense of adventure, I suppose. It's why I go to the theatre, I think. It has to be said that people leaving the theatre, you know, listening to other people leaving the theatre, and indeed people we know, because we all went to the same performance, didn't share my enthusiasm of it. So it, you know, it may not be to everybody's taste, but I've certainly recommended it to a lot of people who, you know, who have experienced immersive theatre like Punch Drunk and other things, although this isn't at all like Punch Drunk, by the way, but you know, prepared for a different sort of experience, so unmissable for me.
Yeah, I have to say, I was a little bit surprised because my immediate thought on leaving was it was reminiscent of something like Black Mirror, which is a TV program that everybody I know is raving about, except you'd never seen it, and yes, one or two other people have never seen it, and nobody seems to have mentioned it in the reviews. But because it's been so much in my mind, because a lot of the podcasts I listen to are from America and they're all discovering Black Mirror over there, it is somewhat reminiscent of it, and I would really like to see people getting in touch with the Black Mirror people, getting in touch with Mike Bartlett and working together, because I could easily see something like this working really well on that TV stage, and it would introduce people to just how good Mike Bartlett is. I mean, we know how good he is. Another play that you didn't mention of his, I should just mention, was Contractions. I think I mentioned quite a lot when we talked about Bull, which was another workplace piece, very short. I think it was first done in a meeting room, an office at the Royal Court. He was sort of ushered into a back room and then sat around the table while they did the play. But he's a great experimenter, and this is an excellent experiment, I think.
The reason I didn't mention Contractions is, sadly, I never saw it, which is a sore subject, because I think it's the only Mike Bartlett play I've never seen. So thank you for reminding me, Tim.
You can find us at AYULTP on Twitter, on the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast page in Facebook. On the web, we are AYULTP.com, and the podcast can also be found on both iTunes and Stitcher, where you can leave a review. Thank you, goodbye.